Hey guys, it's Elena.
And it's Candace.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime.
Listening to Cousins on Crime in a closet
with us together.
I didn't know what you were gonna say.
Well, we didn't even practice that.
This is the first time we've ever been
recording together.
IRL.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Mark it down in the books.
Yeah. October. I don't know what day it is.
I just know because it's on the computer, the 17th.
Okay, 17th. It is a Tuesday.
It is.
We're actually recording the day before drop episode.
Yeah.
Because that's how we're rolling these days. And I only know it's Tuesday because it's Taco Tuesday.
Taco Tuesday? Oh, yeah. You did bring your roses.
Uh-huh. It's good to be back in Texas.
Uh-huh. I've had all the food that you missed.
Yeah. And I said I was going to, like, go hard
until
I got it out of my system. And it's almost out of my system.
Really? Already?
Yeah, I'm just feeling really fat, you know?
Yeah.
Like, fast foody fat.
Yeah. Well, take a break for a week and then do it all over again.
Yeah. My mom's been cooking a lot. She's like, I've got this roast I need to make.
Aww.
And then she's like, do y'all want some soup? And I'm like, this is awesome. Danielle's like, how many meals has she cooked us? So,
and this is why we moved back to Texas.
Exactly.
Aww.
Yeah, it's been good.
So that kind of brings me to the thankful season.
Ah, should we do it before or after?
Oh, let's do it after.
Okay.
But yeah.
Just to bring people back.
Yeah.
To, up.
For the positive. Okay.
We won't. Hey, Joran Vandersloot is back in the news. Have you seen this?
I have not.
So, you know, he's the worst. He's the absolute worst. This most recent thing was that he told Natalie Holloway's family that he was going to tell them where her body was and what happened. And they have to give him this amount of money. Well, they did. And then he basically lied. So they sued him for extortion.
Right.
So this is the latest thing. And now he has a hearing, if you're listening to this, today, Wednesday, he has a hearing and he's supposed to make a plea deal. And he says, I'll make a plea deal to get out of this extortion case.
Oh my gosh.
And I'll tell you where she is. But he's such a freaking liar.
I know.
How could they? Come on. I know that they want to know where she is. He's never going to tell the truth.
Right. But it's they have to at least say, okay, let's hear what you have to say.
Right. Well, one of the stories he's told over the years has to be true. He's told so many lies, but I feel like there's a part of the truth in there somewhere. Like, I think she probably died, probably accidentally, and he got his dad to help dispose of her. And I think they did take her out to sea and dumped her in the ocean because the boat, you know, all of that stuff. And so, if you guys don't know what we're talking about the disappearance of Natalie Holloway in 2000, was it five?
Yeah, something like that. It was a long time ago.
Yeah. And she's never been found. We don't know what happened to her, except we really know that it was Joran Vandersloot. He did it. We know that. Like, we know that in our hearts. Hasn't been proven. He's never been charged with her murder. But then, like, several years ago, he killed another girl, and he did get in trouble for that one.
Exactly.
So,
oh, my gosh.
Anyway, time will tell. Like, I'm going to
Do you think he's having a battle in his mind, like, oh, I want to tell, but oh, no, I can't?
No, I don't. I think he's a narcissist, and I think he's having fun.
It's a game.
I think he's arrogant. Mm-hmm. And I think he knows he's in control of this situation. And he's like, I'm the only person who knows.
Right.
Because his dad's dead.
Yeah.
So I really think he's just like, I hold the key and I'm the most important person in this room right now, you know?
Wow.
So, anyways.
Well, I hope they do get the answers that they're looking for. That's just, I couldn't imagine.
I know. I should probably be careful when I cough or clear my throat because we're using one microphone. So anyway, we're figuring this out. This is our first time in person, so
if the audio is kind of crazy, yeah. Please just give us grace.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we're always saying our audio might be weird this week. But, you know, our audio might be weird this week. So, yeah. Get over it. Listen to the story.
Yeah.
Lena, are these from my wedding?
It is.
Guys, I'm in Lena's closet right now. And I am currently holding these shoes that I made my bridesmaids.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And your bridesmaid dress is right there.
It's right here.
Oh, my gosh. Guys.
And, yeah, so every time I've gone through my closet and gone through my shoes, I've, like...
You're like, I can't get rid of those.
Those will always be in my closet.
I bet you're the only one of my bridesmaids that still has those shoes.
Yeah. I don't wear them.
They're very comfortable feeling. Yeah.
I just don't want to mess them up. They're like nostalgic.
They do look pristine. I mean, they look brand new. Okay. Yeah. Well, memory lane.
Yeah.
Will you put on that dress? And
you don't want to see me in that dress. I was not comfortable in that dress in the first place. I wore it just for you.
Is this a shotgun shell right here?
It is. This is Chris's gun cabinet.
I'm sitting next to guns and liquor.
Yeah.
And bridesmaid shoes and dresses.
A bottle of wine.
A bottle of wine.
That we're not drinking. Yeah, I should have got a fresh
bottle. I should have brought one. Yeah. I will next time.
But, when you told me you were coming over today, I was like, I have to clean. I can't just throw everything in my closet because that's where we're going to sit.
Isn't that funny? Like, everyone, when you have company, mm-hmm. you have a room or a place that mm-hmm. you throw everything. When we were doing our house showings, there was literally nowhere I could put junk because people were like opening all the closets and the rooms. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. But I'm jealous that you have a Monica closet.
Oh.
Everybody should have a Monica closet. But anyways, enough of this. What do you have?
Okay. Well, John and Linda Sohus. Does that sound familiar?
No.
Maybe when I tell you about I don't want to say the main guy because we're talking about John and Linda's life here. But we'll get into you might recognize other names.
Okay.
So John Sohus was born on December 20th, 1956, and was adopted by Dee Dee Sohus. John's adoptive father divorced Dee Dee and moved to Arizona. John would go back and forth between the two homes and had a great relationship with his dad. And he would do anything to help Dee Dee, his mom.
Oh.
So at age 27, we're just going to jump there because there's not a lot about him.
Let's go.
He was a computer programmer and was, by the accounts of those who knew him, a little nerdy.
Yeah, I would say.
So John was a Dungeons and Dragons fanatic. Nice. I feel like there was another case that we talked about Dungeons and Dragons. But anyway.
Because it was that satanic panic. And it was like, oh, they're into Dungeons and Dragons. Oh, yeah. They must be guilty.
Yeah, it's a popular game even today.
Yeah.
So Linda was born on September 17th, 1956. She was an artist, an artiste. Under the pseudonym Cody.
Okay.
She enjoyed painting animals and fantasy creatures and sometimes took commissions for those paintings.
Okay. As you should.
Yeah. Linda was very interested in science fiction and belonged to the Los Angeles Science Fantasy Society.
Okay, these people belong together.
Yes, they do. It's funny that you say that because when the two of them met in 1982, Linda's sister Kathy made a comment that the two were an odd pair. But there was a lid for every pot.
Well, that's true, but sometimes you can't find the lid.
Yeah.
It's so like, I'm glad they found their lid, you know?
I know.
I'm so glad they had each other. Because yeah. I can see it being like two people like that just floating their life, like not finding their
niche.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they did. They found each other.
Awesome.
So John, he was 5'6", and Linda was 6 feet tall.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. The two of them started going to Dungeon and Dragons games together. She didn't play, but she just wanted to hang out with him while he played. They were just happy being in each other's presence. So after marrying, John and Linda moved into Dee Dee Sohus's house, John's mother. Okay. The couple wanted to stay in the guest house that Dee Dee had on the property, but a man named Christopher Chichester was renting it out.
Okay.
So they just stayed in the main house with Dee Dee. Susan Kaufman, Linda's best friend, in an interview, she said she asked Linda one day why she and John lived with her mother-in-law in the main house instead of the guest house on the property. Well, Linda's response was, well, there's a renter who lives there and we don't talk to him because he's kind of creepy.
Ooh.
Yeah. In early 1985, it was about 2 years later after marrying, and they were still living in San Marino with Dee Dee, but it seemed that their luck had changed. Linda had told Susan that John had a new opportunity for a dream job. The couple went to visit Susan, driving over in their new white Nissan pickup truck.
Oh, excuse me.
Mm-hmm. They told friends that they felt trapped living with Dee Dee and looked forward to moving into a place of their own. Linda and Susan were making plans to go to a science fiction convention in Phoenix. And John was going to go with them. This was going to be happening in March. So Susan got a little perturbed when Linda called and told her that she and John were going to take a 2-week trip to New York.
Oh?
John had gotten a job with the government and she couldn't say much about it. She could only say that the employers wanted both of them and they had to go to New York for an interview.
Okay.
So the couple left on February 8th, 1985, and Linda assured Susan that she would be back in time for the convention. So Susan's like, all right. But that's the last time Susan heard from her.
Oh, no.
Yeah, 2 weeks went by and they didn't return home.
I bet Linda was so pissed because they probably had like matching cosplay outfits or something.
Probably.
She was like, ugh.
Yeah.
And I can't believe she's done this to me.
Right. And it was just, you know, what's going on? Because Linda, I mean, this is what she lives for.
Right.
She loves this stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, they didn't return home in the 2 weeks. And in fact, they just never came back.
Oh my gosh, this doesn't sound good.
So a few weeks after they left, Linda's sister Kathy received a call from a kennel company.
Huh?
She learned that Linda had left her six cats there.
What in the world? Six?
Well, another report said four cats.
I'm sorry, more than two is too many.
Right. Nonetheless, several cats.
Good Lord.
Yeah. So,
and you know cat people, they're not going to be leaving their cats anywhere. Exactly.
Not more than
no
2 weeks. Mm-mm. So the kennel, whoever left them there, paid the kennel for a 2 week stay. So they expected the owner to come back.
Right.
When it had been well over 2 weeks and Linda hadn't returned and they couldn't contact Linda by phone, they called Kathy, Linda's sister. Kathy just knew something was wrong. Like you said, she didn't believe they would leave long without their cats.
Right.
She called Dee Dee, hoping that she would know what was going on. Dee Dee told her that the couple was on a secret mission. And okay. She was not able to contact, or John and Linda were not able to contact family members. However, her story changed every time Kathy called Dee Dee. Kathy believed that this was due to Dee Dee's alcohol problem.
Oh.
There were several reports that Dee Dee was difficult to deal with because she was just always drunk.
Yikes.
Yeah. So in April of 1985, Kathy filed a missing persons report with police. Susan said that she wanted to, but she couldn't because she wasn't family.
Right.
But now that Kathy reported them missing, Susan gave all of the information that she could to the police. Police contacted Dee Dee to follow up and see what she knew, and she claimed that they were not missing, but they're on a secret mission.
Okay.
Yeah. She told officers that she received this information from her source.
Okay.
She did not offer any information of who this source was, and so with no evidence of foul play, police were unable to investigate.
What? So they just didn't?
I mean, they're like, well, it sounds like they left on their own will.
Yeah. Adults.
Yeah. So they kind of left it at that for a few months. So 3 months after the couple supposedly left, Susan received a picture postcard.
What?
Yeah. The baffling thing about this was that it came from Paris, France.
Huh? Oh, this is an international secret mission.
Right.
Okay. Exciting.
Mm. Well, on the back of it, it read, "Dear Sue, kinda missed New York. Oops. But this can be lived with." Signed, John and Linda.
Okay.
Right. So, it just didn't sit right. Yeah. She did not believe this postcard came from Linda.
Right.
Dee Dee also received a postcard, believed to be written by Linda, saying, "Looks like we made a wrong turn."
What?
Signed, Linda.
From France?
From France.
"Looks like we made a wrong turn." Mm-hmm. I'll say.
Yeah. It didn't mention when they were, or why they were in France, or when they would be returning, but Kathy believed that if the couple actually were planning to go to Europe, Linda would have been so excited.
I know. And she would have told them all about it. That's something you, like, tell everybody. Oh my God, we're going to France.
Yeah. I mean, secret mission.
Yeah, I know. That's...
Yeah, I don't know. Sounds like a likely story, but for these two, an artist and a computer programmer.
Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't really track for these.
Yeah, it's not making sense. So Dee Dee started to get concerned about where John and Linda were, finally.
All right.
A few months had gone by, and Dee Dee was ready to file her missing persons report. She told investigators that she had previously contacted them through her source.
What is this? I don't get this. What is she on a secret mission to? Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Sure. However, her source had also disappeared.
Okay. You're drunk, Dee Dee.
Well, she finally revealed who her source was. It was her guest house tenant, Christopher Chichester.
Okay.
Well, Detective Yankovich recalled going to speak with Christopher Chichester, and when he answered the door, he was naked and disheveled.
This is giving O.J. Simpson, like, guest house vibes.
Yeah. So, the detective was like, can you put some clothes on?
Yeah, he's like, put it away, sir. I need to talk to you and I'm distracted.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chichester says, no, I'm a nudist.
Okay. Okay, Chichester.
He said the same thing that Dee Dee said, claiming that John and Linda were away on a secret mission.
Right.
Chichester had recently moved abruptly without leaving a forwarding address for Dee Dee. And so Dee Dee also reported that John's pickup truck, the white Nissan.
Oh, he moved out of the guest house during this time.
Right.
Oh.
Abruptly.
Okay.
Yeah. Didn't tell her where he was going.
He was going to the nudist colony, duh.
Yeah. So John's white Nissan pickup truck was missing when Chichester came up missing.
Oh, no.
However, she could not say when it disappeared. So without proof that a crime had been committed, the investigation...
Oh, for God's sake.
...was stalled. Yeah. So Detective Yankovich, he dug deeper into Chichester. He's like, we got something here.
Yeah. He's like, I've seen this man head to toe. I need to know more.
Yeah. There's something interesting here. He found that he was in possession of John's white pickup truck. Well, when police began asking questions about him and linking him to the truck, Chichester left his $100,000 a year job.
What?
He was a Wall Street bond trader, and he went into hiding.
He did that in his nudies?
Well, maybe by now he's wearing clothes.
He turned up to Wall Street in the nude?
I don't think they'll allow you to do that.
I don't think so.
Maybe he just had a suit that he'd throw on
for
the day.
Yeah, his birthday suit.
So, yeah. Might I add, backing up a little bit, around the time of the Sohus's disappearance, neighbors reported a foul smell coming from the guest house chimney.
Not this chestnut.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And not just the foul smell, but they saw a weird color of smoke coming from the chimney.
Weird color?
Yeah. But... also, Chichester had asked friends what to do, how to throw away a barrel of chemicals. So.
Huh? Okay. Interesting.
What do you think he was doing with the chemicals? The chemicals and the chimney.
Burning it.
In 1988, 3 years later, Chichester resurfaced in Connecticut. So they were in California. Now he's in Connecticut. Now he was going by the name of Christopher Mountbatten Crow.
Mountbatten?
Oh.
Okay, Meghan Markle. Get yes. alive.
Oh, but wait, there's more.
Oh.
So he was trying to sell the white Nissan pickup truck belonging to John. The man who he was trying to sell it to realized that there was a lien on the truck, and he's like, no, I don't want that.
I'm good.
So, again, Chichester / Mountbatten Crow, he left the area, and police could not question him.
Oh, my gosh.
Detectives found that Chichester had a few aliases. Christopher Chichester, Christian Gerhardtsrider, and Chris Crow. They were all the same person.
Okay.
When detectives went to Kidder, Peabody, and Company, where Chris Crow worked, his boss told him that he got a call from Chris saying that his mother and father had been kidnapped in Pakistan and that he had to take about 2 months off to go find them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Was he of Pakistani?
No, ma'am.
Okay. He's white? Straight white.
He was, yeah.
Okay.
White. And
this story checks then.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Makes total sense.
Yeah.
Pakistan.
Don't know why they were in Pakistan. Probably because they weren't.
Yeah, probably because they didn't exist. Uh-huh.
The company had his fingerprints on file, and they gave them to the police.
Oh, my gosh. Well,
I think that's kind of smart.
Oh, my God. This guy's such an idiot.
So, that same year in 1988, Dee Dee's health had declined, and she ended up passing away.
Aw, Dee.
Just 3 years after they went missing.
That's sad.
Some say it was the alcoholism, and some say that it was due to a broken heart.
Mm.
But just before she died, she had moved out of her home and moved into a trailer home.
Okay.
And she sold the house. She also had John written out of her will.
What?
Yeah. She told a friend it was because she hadn't heard from him in the last few years, and basically she just felt like he had abandoned her.
That's really sad.
It really is sad.
Like, I feel like maybe that was part of the alcoholism, that she was probably very confused. I mean,
right.
At one point, she thought they were missing because she filed that missing persons report.
Yeah, maybe excited for them at first, thinking, oh, he's got this wonderful government job.
Yeah.
And then, oh, wait, maybe he is missing. Oh, I haven't heard from him in years. Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, that's really sad.
So, Dee Dee's property was eventually sold. In 1994, when the new owners were putting in a swimming pool, they had a daunting surprise.
Don't say it. Oh, no.
The men digging the ground found this partial skeleton of a small adult Caucasian male. The head was wrapped in plastic bags.
Oh my gosh.
The arms and legs and torso were wrapped in saran wrap material.
Oh, that's freaky.
Yeah, and then all those parts were buried.
Wow.
So, further investigation revealed the presence of blood in the guest house where Chichester had lived.
Oh.
Now, it had been so long by now that they found it that they couldn't just test the blood. But it was, you know, they used luminol and it lit up.
Yeah.
So the man had died of blunt force trauma to the head. They were sure that it was John Sohus. However, a lack of dental records prevented a positive identification.
Oh, no.
The skeleton matched John's characteristics, but authorities were unable to identify it for years because there was no jawbone or teeth.
Oh, no. Well, yeah, that seems like he's trying to...
He knows what he's doing.
He's done this before, for sure.
Mm-hmm. They did not have a DNA sample from John's biological relatives since John was adopted.
Oh, yes.
But in 2010, the skeleton was finally conclusively identified as John Sohus. I read a report. It was from a half-sister.
Oh, okay.
Was able to give DNA. Investigators excavated the property and used ground-penetrating radar to look for a second body, but they found nothing of interest.
Oh, no. Linda was somewhere else?
Yeah. Where's Linda?
Oh, that's really sad. And Dee Dee's son was buried in her backyard that whole time?
Right, in her backyard.
Ugh.
Yeah.
That's messed up.
And she died thinking he left her.
That's so sad.
Yeah. So, the Sohus case received additional attention in 2008 with a new alias. And this time as Clark Rockefeller.
Okay, I know who you're talking about now.
Yeah, he was impersonating a member of the Rockefeller family. Mm-hmm. Clark had... I'm not going to go into all that story.
See, I know some of that story.
Yeah. So what I will tell you is he kidnapped his young daughter after going through a divorce with his wife. And so during a custody dispute with his ex-wife, he was going through visitation with his daughter, and he assaulted the social worker supervising their visitation and fled and took her with him. Mm. He went from Massachusetts to Baltimore, Maryland, and he was arrested a week later. Uh-huh. Yeah. So his face is all in the news. So Right. Do you think people are going to recognize him?
Yeah.
Maybe. So, yeah. Author. There's an author, Edward Savio. I think I'm saying that right. He came forward. He says he knew this man as Christian Gerhard Schrader.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
In Chesterton, Fieldville. Mm-hmm. You know Mr. Deeds when she's like making up a last name and she's like, West Chesterton, Fieldville. I don't know what it is, but anyway.
That's funny. So he briefly lived with him when Christian arrived from Germany to the United States.
Okay.
Yes. Edward contacted the FBI during the manhunt after seeing a photo of Clark Rockefeller on the news. He's like, hey guys, that's not Clark. His name is Christian Gerhard Schrader, and he's from Germany.
I also think the Rockefellers were probably like, we don't know him.
Yeah, he's not one of us. In 2008, a woman named Dana Glad Farrar saw a photo of Gerhard Schrader in the Los Angeles Times and realized he was the same person that she knew as Christopher Chichester. She contacted friends at newspapers and became a witness in the case.
Oh, good.
Also, a real estate agent recognized Clark Rockefeller as Chip Smith.
He couldn't have picked, like, the most basic alias.
All these other
elaborate names.
And here we have Chip Smith. He was a man to whom she had just... leased a home to.
Okay.
So he had been sentenced to 5 years in prison for the kidnapping and was close to the end of his prison term when the murder charge interrupted his chance to regain freedom. So he's like, oh, I'm almost out. No, you're not.
Psych.
Authorities determined that Clark Rockefeller and Christopher Chichester were the same person, and his real identity was Christian Carl Gerhard Schrader. He was born in West Germany in 1961. He came to the United States as an exchange student when he was in his teens. He attended a high school in Connecticut, and for a short time he went to the University of Wisconsin at Madison. He married a woman in Wisconsin in 1981, but his wife later said that he left her the day after the wedding.
Wow.
So, Man. Yeah. And that's when his web of lies just amped up.
Yeah.
Moving from one alias to the next. In March 2011, he was charged with John Sohus's murder. He pled not guilty to killing John. Mm-hmm. Opening statements in the trial were made when the defense attorney suggested that Linda Sohus was responsible for her husband's death, but didn't suggest a motive.
Hmm.
Defense attorneys said Linda Sohus acted suspiciously before the couple's disappearance. Linda told Susan Kaufman, her friend, that they were going to on a 2-week trip to New York, but she told her mother, Susan Mayfield, that they were going to Connecticut. Okay, but who's connected with Connecticut?
Hmm.
That would be Christian Gerhard Schrader.
Right.
So Dana, Glad Farrar, who knew the defendant when she was in film school, she was a student there at the University of Southern California, testified that he invited her to a party in his yard to play Trivial Pursuit.
In his yard?
In his yard.
Clothes optional.
Oh, gosh.
Trivial Pursuit.
I'm dead. So, she said as soon as she sat down, I noticed there was dirt in the yard that had been dug up. She said, "What's going on in your yard, Chris? It's all dug up."
And did she also ask why they're sitting in the yard playing this game?
Well, she says it was a party. Okay. Were there other people there?
Okay.
I don't know. But she did question him about it, and he says, "Oh, I'm just having plumbing problems."
Okay.
She said he told her he was some sort of film producer, and she often saw him lingering at USC. She said he gave her his card that had a crest and and announced him as the 13th Baronet.
Oh.
Baronet.
Baronet?
How do you say that? Yeah, Baronet.
Baronet?
Of England.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mountbatten.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
Related to Harry and William.
Probably.
Awesome.
She said, "I didn't know what a baronet was. I thought it was kind of phony." She said he claimed to be rich, but there were inconsistencies. He had a really old car. Also, he often showed up at her home at dinner time, obviously hungry.
"I need some food, please. My servants are off this evening. Could you feed me, please?"
So evidence in the case was largely circumstantial, but jurors were most swayed by two plastic bags found buried with Sohus's remains. One bag from the University of Wisconsin.
What?
Mm-hmm, where Gerhard Schrider
attended classes. He couldn't have found, classes. Like, a Walmart bag or something a little more, like, you know.
Was this him putting his stamp on it? Or he just really didn't think it was going to be dug up? I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah, so that was one of the bags, University of Wisconsin. He attended there between 1979 and 1982. And one of the other bags was from the University of Southern California, where he also attended.
Seriously? Now, this feels intentional.
You think?
That feels intentional. But why? Because he's playing a game?
I think so. Like, he's in this fantasy world, really.
Con men really fascinate me. Like, the psychology of a con man.
Yeah.
That fascinates me. Because it's just like, they really are in a fantasy world.
Yeah, you can be whatever you want
to
be.
Like, that histrionic personality that they're just, wow.
Yeah. So jurors also heard evidence that Gerhard Schrider was in possession of John's pickup truck following the murder. Authorities were unable to authenticate the writing on the postcards. They did have handwriting experts, which they disagreed on with each other, whether it was Linda's handwriting or not. A coworker who was familiar with her handwriting said that it could be her handwriting. Mm. But lead prosecutor Habib Balian said that she believes the motive was that with John and Linda Sohus out of the way, Christopher Chichester would have been home alone with Dee Dee, with a vulnerable old woman sitting on a large property in a wealthy San Marino neighborhood, and he could take advantage of her and maybe even get put in her will.
Yeah.
So the murder trial was held in March and April of 2013 and ended with a conviction of first-degree murder. The verdict included an enhancement for use of deadly weapon to bludgeon John to death.
Oh.
So after he was convicted, he fired his lawyers. And he represented himself during the sentencing phase.
Of course he did. Of course he did.
Right. Because now he's this prestigious lawyer.
Oh, now he's a lawyer, yeah.
He maintained his innocence during the sentencing hearing and said, I want to assert my innocence and that I firmly believe that the victim's wife killed the victim. But be that as it may, once again, I did not commit the crime of which I stand accused. Yeah. Yeah, eye roll.
Nice speech, though.
Yeah, thank you for that. On August 15th of 2013, he was given the maximum sentence of 27 years.
I knew you were going to say some crap like that. I knew you were going to say 27 years.
Yeah, well, 27 years to life. His sentence was reduced on an appeal, though, in 2015 to 26. I mean, he lost a year with good time credit.
Oh, right.
He will be eligible for parole in December of 2029, just a few years away. He will be 68 years old, and a parole hearing is currently scheduled for November of 2028 for that. He was never charged with anything regarding Linda because they don't have her body.
Right.
So, I mean...
Wow.
If by chance she's still alive and out there living her life, just so you know, she is Caucasian, with red hair and blue eyes. She's 6 feet tall and has a stocky build.
You could find her at a science fiction convention. Yeah,
sci-fi con.
Yeah.
But we'll post pictures of her and John, so that you can see what they look like. But if you have any information, if you've come in contact with Chichester, Gerhardt Strider,
Rockefeller,
Chip Crow, Smith,
I should have taken notes and written down all his names.
Yeah, so if you know anything, you can contact San Marino Police Department at 626-300-0720.
Wow. I did not expect where that story went.
Yeah.
I didn't at all.
Yeah. It's a wild ride. And I put that together in 2 days, y'all.
And you know what? That's not even all of it.
No, it's not.
As far as his crimes go.
Yeah. You can definitely find, or just, you know, Google any of those names. I'm sure you'll find something on him. I didn't want to talk a lot about him. I talked enough about him.
That could have been a whole series, but I didn't know about that murder.
Mm.
So, whew, that was a wild ride.
Yes, it was.
And I'm thankful that it's over.
Yeah.
What are you thankful for, Elena?
So, at the beginning of the episode, I was going to say, you know, you were talking about how your mom just... Here's some food. Here's a roast. And, you know, I'm just thankful for our parents who just are, you know, that sounds so cliche. But I'm thankful for my mom. But no, we have really great parents.
Yeah.
And they really support us and they want to feed us and nurture us. And they do a fantastic job.
Yeah, I think so, too. And we can nurture them right back, right?
Yes.
Because both of your parents are laid up right now.
They're laid up. Neither of them can drive. Bless. Yeah, Dad had knee surgery. Mom had shoulder surgery. And, yeah, that's another thing I'm thankful for, that I'm able.
Yeah. Yeah.
I work from home. I can take my work with me. And I'm able to take care of them and help them out. So.
Yeah, that's great. I'm thankful to be back here. I know I already said that, but it just, you know, my peace and heart was like in South Carolina and in Charleston. And every time I thought about moving over, you know, the period of months and months and months yeah. that we had planned to move, I just would cry. And I'm not a crier at all. But it would just scare me because I would be nervous that once I got here, even though I know it's the right decision for our family and I know it's what's best for my girls
right.
to grow up near family and just everything life would have, you know, bring us being here. I was worried that I would kind of get depressed because I have struggled with that my whole life. And it hasn't been that at all. Yay. It's been just, it like, honestly, Daniel and I both said it feels like we're home.
Oh,
like, it feels
yay.
Like we're home. And that's weird to say.
Oh,
like,
I love that.
I've never felt at home here since I moved away.
Right.
So every time I've come back to visit, it's never felt like I'm going back home. Like,
right.
It's never felt like that. But it does. And yay. I'm really thankful. And Hazel's warming up. You know, she's had a hard time, but I can tell things are moving in the direction of, like, her getting used to things, and mm-hmm. I'm thankful for that. And, yeah, just our family, and
yeah,
so much fun.
Oh, I love that. That just made my day,
because
I know you were worried about that, and I was worried for
yeah.
you. Because South Carolina is beautiful, and Texas can be beautiful, but it's getting ugly.
Well, it's very concrete now. There's
yes,
lots of bridges, lots of road
no
works,
trees.
Lots of industry. And if you've seen The Notebook, or have you ever watched One Tree Hill, or watched The Outer Banks, mm-hmm. or, like, that's the
yes.
Carolinas.
Yes.
And that is... There's a reason why everyone films
right.
movies and TV in Charleston and in North Carolina. It's because it's a dream.
It is.
And, yeah, it's so anyway, and you know, my parents, both my parents, they were like, I just hope you're going to be okay when you get here. Cause they
yeah.
know me. And I think I just got in my head, you know,
oh yeah.
about
the what ifs and
yeah and
the unknown, like yeah.
And I think too, because I knew I'm making the right decision, and sometimes you have to make a hard decision when you know it's the right one and you know it's not going to be easy. But I think because I knew it was the right decision and there was kind of like no turning back from mm-hmm. it,
right,
I knew I was making like a final decision
yeah.
coming here.
Mm-hmm.
And even, like, Daniel, my husband, was like, I just want to make sure, like, that this is what you want. And I'm like, so,
yeah.
anyway, I knew it's what was best for, and Daniel loves it here. He always has, and so, anyway.
Yeah.
But I'm thankful that it has been, like, very easy
good.
On me.
Yeah.
Hasn't been easy on Hazel. But she's 3, almost 4, and she's going to be just fine.
Yeah.
So
she'll get into
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And you know what? We have the Train and Grain coming
up.
That was... Okay. The Train and Grain. Y'all don't even know. I mean, there's videos out there.
We've got to find the video
oh,
and
man.
Post it. We performed at the Train and Grain.
The talent show.
What? Year was that?
Wearing our wind shorts.
Our Umbros. Oh my gosh.
What was it? 90.
Oh my
probably
gosh.
90.
Nine.
Wait.
We were, how old were we? Maybe 7 or 8? No.
An
we were older than that.
9 or 10.
Because I moved here when I was 9. So
okay.
it had to have been after that.
Yeah.
So that would have been like 93?
Yeah. That sounds about right.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, the talent show, the sumo wrestling, that was fun.
Wow.
Yeah, so we'll see what they come up with this year.
Yeah.
I know it's not like when we were kids, but I hope it's just as fun that Hazel can make
yeah.
memories of her own there.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be cool.
Yeah.
So, well, guys, thanks for hanging in there.
Yeah, we're just chit-chatting.
All of our chit-chat. Mm-hmm. And see if you can catch Jorn Vandersloot's hearing today, if you can.
Yeah.
I think it's today. So, anyway, thanks for listening. This was great. Let's do it again sometime.
Okay.
Bye, guys.
Bye, y'all.
Bye now.
Bye.
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 Well, thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. If you're enjoying our podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating so that other true crime fans can find us.
If you have any case suggestions or just want to say hey, email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on Instagram, where we post case photos and information at Cousins on Crime Podcast.